Okay, I think we're live, and I am flying by the seat of my pants here. So, about 15 minutes ago, realized that the video that I had pre-recorded wasn't working. It said error. So I'm not really sure what that's about. But hooked up the live stream real quickly. So feel free to comment if you are seeing things as they should look, or if you are having trouble hearing or seeing. And we have a few folks here as well, so I'll try to speak to everybody and not just to the camera. But it looks like we have Robert says, "Hi, Daniel, well done. See you live." Wow, okay. Just 5 minutes ago, I was sure that we were sunk, unrecovered. Unrecoverably, if that's a word. So, okay, Proverbs lesson 10. It is idleness, drunkenness, and gluttony. So, go through. Yeah, sounds good. I can hear myself in the. Okay, I was kind of hoping y'all could see this as well. Can y'all see that?
Yeah.
See it decently good? Okay.
We're about to.
Okay, but we're in the wrong place here. So what I want to do is something different here. Here we
Ow.
Let's skip to where we want. Sorry. Oh, I see. We were at the end. We want to be at the beginning. Okay. Dora's on too, so we're good. If Dora's here, then we can carry on. Okay, here's where we are. I think this is where we want to be. And I'll show you the goals, or the goal for today's class is to understand the consequences of a lack of self-control. So basically, with idleness and drunkenness and gluttony, what we're getting at, as we'll see, is that we can group these together and look at a lack of control, self-control, and various desires that get the best of us. And so the goal will be to understand that, how destructive it can be, and then to improve our self-discipline as well. We haven't done objectives in this class, but objectives are kind of like more specific facts and details that if you can get those, they're not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is the character formation. But if there's things that we can remember, facts that we can remember from tonight's class, then it'll help us to get those things in our minds, maybe in our hearts, and then help to change us. So that's what we want to do. Want to be able to listen things that rule over the sluggard, the drunkard, and the glutton. We want to talk about some things they all have in common, as well as talk about three principles of disciplined work. Okay, let's get into it then. It looks like we have about 20 people on. So hopefully, if you were lost and the original video wasn't working, hopefully everyone's at least able to see this at some point. Let's talk about the sluggard. So on your handout, there are some verses there. And the sluggard's a pretty familiar character in the book of Proverbs. And there are, as you might remember, some graphic detail or descriptions of the sluggard that are memorable. So 28, 19 is the same as 12, 11, or almost very similar to 12, 11. He who works in the land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment. So the picture here is of someone that is he's a daydreamer, always has big plans, always has big ideas, but it's contrasted with the one who's actually doing something. So the sluggard is kind of always dreaming of some great thing, but never actually does anything. You might remember this picture. The sluggard says, "There is a lion in the road, a fierce lion roaming in the streets." Then it says, as a door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns on his bed. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He's too lazy to bring it back to his mouth. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who answer discreetly. So a few things going on here. One is this idea of excuse making. So there's a lion in the road. I think that's an extreme example of someone who, you know, any excuse to get out of what they have to do, they'll run with it. But you also see some other things here. The door turning on its hinges. We'll talk about sleep in a minute, and you definitely get that picture of can't get out of bed. He's just rolling back and forth. But maybe, you know, larger than that, you could think about someone who's always acting like they're going to do something, or we might say always fixing to do something, but not actually ever doing anything. Kind of always saying, oh yeah, I'm about to go do that, or oh yeah, I'm, you know, in a while I'll do that, but they never either get out of bed to do it, or more generally, they never actually make good on what they say. And so because of that, this picture of, you know, your hand in the bowl of potato chips but not actually able to bring it to your mouth, this idea of tasks that are begun and never completed. And so because those tasks are not completed, then whatever benefit you might get from that task never comes to you because it's never followed through. But then on the back end, you see this idea of the sluggard being wiser in his own eyes. After all of that inactivity and then loss of potential, there's either more excuses or more rationalization. Oh, well, the reason I didn't do that was because of this or that or the other. And you see that in Proverbs 26. Again, 19:24, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish, will not bring it even to his own mouth. 12:27, the lazy man roasts his game, but a diligent man prizes his possession. This one's interesting to me because I wonder, how did he get the game to begin with? Did someone give it to him? Did he maybe go that far as to hunt and bring it back? But the idea is that however he ended up with this this resource or this opportunity, it was all for nothing because he didn't have the follow through. How many times are we like that? We get to a certain point and accomplish so much, but then the rest of it we can't seem to finish it out. Okay. And then in terms of this sluggard's relationship with others, vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes. So was the sluggard to those who sinned him. His relationships are difficult because no one can really trust him and no one can really depend on him. And so people would kind of rather not have him around than entrust him with something that's going to be in the end lost. Okay, so this is the picture and then we understand it. But let's talk about the his side of the story, what he might say about all of this. 20 verse 4 is interesting to me. It says, a sluggard does not plow in season, so at harvest time he looks but finds nothing. Some of the translations are different. Some of the proverbs are in general are different translation. I don't know if some of y'all's has this, but it seemed like mine said, a sluggard does not plow after autumn or something like that. So I'm not an agricultural person. I know like nothing, but maybe some of y'all do. Can back me up on this. But it seems like the idea might be, if I was a farmer, I would know, that, you know, once the harvest time is over, there's some work to do right after that to get your land ready for the next season, okay? And maybe before winter especially, you know, because in the winter you can't do much at all, but maybe late autumn there's things that you can do to prepare for the springtime and for planting. I think the picture here is that the sluggard is saying, it's too hard. You know, we've already spent all this work harvesting. I don't really want to go back out there and, you know, in the cold weather and do something that's going to be difficult. Maybe just put it off until the spring. Again, this idea of there's a lion in the streets or I'll be murdered if I go out. We would say that on his end, there's always threats and danger. It's always something's out to get me or there's always something out there. But what's interesting is that in 22:13, these seem like made up problems, right? There's a lion in the street. Really? I mean, that seems like a made-up excuse or an imagined threat. But what's interesting is that in 15:19, it says that the way of the sluggard is blocked with thorns and the path of the upright is a highway. So again, difficulties and complications, but these are more real. And so maybe this is how this works, is that if a sluggard is already prone to make excuses, and maybe to imagine difficulties or threats that aren't really there or aren't very realistic, but But those excuses are a way to get out of doing work. Well, I think according to 15:19, because he is lazy, he creates his own problems. And we'll see some of those in a little bit. And those problems are very real. But they just add to the difficulty of doing anything because they become thorns in his way. And so it kind of spirals to a degree to where the imagined threats produce laziness, which make life really problematic, we might say, for the lazy person. But his side of the story is, oh, there's always something that's out there that's dangerous, or it's too hard, or you know, not worth it, or something. The consequences of this, of course, are you know, destructive. Remember that we talked in general about the contrast in Proverbs between life and death. And so, you know, the Proverbs paints the way of wisdom as a life that is full and blessed and high quality, and then the way of folly is miserable. It's a way of darkness and stumbling. And so think about this. The sluggard craves and gets nothing. The life of the lazy person is always wanting to have more, or wanting, you know, security or peace or even material blessing, but never getting it because they never put in the work to achieve it. So it's a life of frustration, unfulfilled desire, and so on. Another consequence here, diligent hands will rule, chapter 12, verse 24, but laziness ends in slave labor. So someone who is not, doesn't have the initiative to get things done on their own is always going to have somebody supervising them. That's the only way they're going to get anything done. And that's annoying. No one wants to have someone always looking over their shoulder, checking their work. But for the sluggard, he's not trustworthy to leave on his own and accomplish his work. And so he has this kind of more difficult, miserable life, we might say, always kind of being forced to work by others. And then 28:19 is the other version of the verse we saw earlier in 12:11, that the one who chases fantasies will have his fill of poverty. And this is, again, what we were referring to earlier of a very real consequence. We understand that poverty, not having financial resources, that makes it hard to do well in life, and that even causes problems like anxiety and stress and all of that. Well, for the sluggard, he has created that problem for himself, and the inability to work hard and provide for himself and for his family, you know, leads to poverty, which is a, you know, makes life more difficult. So again, you have this kind of vicious cycle of sorts that all kind of goes back to laziness. Okay, what's the real problem, or what's really at the heart of this? And you'll notice that if you look through a lot of these verses, this idea of sleep keeps coming up. So 10:5, he who sleeps in harvest is a disgraceful son. 20:13, do not love sleep or you will grow poor. And then this more famous section in Proverbs 6, go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer, ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding the hands to rest. And poverty will come on you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man. I think literal sleep is being talked about in each of these. I mean, I think we probably all know somebody that has maybe slept through a job interview, or has a chronic oversleeping problem and they miss this event or that thing and it causes problems in their relationship. Or maybe we're this way. We just fail to be as productive as we could be because we can't get out of bed in the morning and make the most of that time. But there may be also something that's, again, larger here. If we think of sleep as a few different things. One, think about sleep as just a prioritizing of my own comfort and pleasure. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing in the morning when we hear the alarm clock and we don't want to go anywhere. Well, it's really more pleasurable or comfortable to just stay put, right? Or we might say that we're talking about a focus on the moment. Those two things go together. So in the moment, this is the most comfortable thing. There's no kind of there's a lack of awareness of, you know, later in the day or later in life. And so I think what we're talking about the sluggard, sleeping his life away, it's maybe more this on in a big picture. There is a lack of activity and responsiveness or attention because the focus is all on, you know, what's going on right here in the moment, what's most comfortable, pleasurable for me right now. And that makes us, when we live like that, kind of walk around in a drowsy haze that's, you know, ignorant of, you know, problems that we need to address or opportunities that are out there or problems in other people's life. And we're really just thinking about, you know, what's good for me right now in the moment. And that seems to be the picture of the sluggard. And so you have pictures like this in 24 with the same phrase, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. But notice that that comes after a description of the vineyard and wall and field that is abandoned, come to ruin. And that's the result of not working hard, is that life kind of crumbles around the sluggard. And in 18:9, interesting, one who is slack in his work is brother to the one who destroys. So the Proverbs associates laziness and idleness with destruction. And it not only you miss out on potential opportunity, but it destroys the kind of life that you do have, and is destructive even to others as well, in a person's life. Okay, so that's laziness. I feel the need to like ask for comments and questions, but y'all can do that later. We're gonna get through this class first. So let's move on to drunkenness. And there's a longer description here that we have in 23:29-35. So let's read it and notice some of the descriptors here. Proverbs 23:29-35. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has strife? Who has complaints? Who has needless bruises? Who has bloodshot eyes? Those who linger over wine, who go to sample bowls of mixed wine. Do not gaze at wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a snake, poisons like a viper. Your eyes will see strange sights, and your mind imagine confusing things. You will be like one sleeping on the high seas, lying on top of the rigging. They hit me, you will say, but I'm not hurt. They beat me, but I don't feel it. When will I wake up so I can find another drink? Notice as we go through here that really in general, there are a lot of the same sorts of patterns that we saw earlier with idleness or with laziness. The drunkard always has problems. And you see there's both kind of physical problems, you know, redness of eyes, bruises that are described here, as well as, you know, strife and conflict. And maybe this is very real to some of us in our own lives or people that we know. An obsession, addiction, even with alcohol, leads to this just problems all the time in a person's life and in their relationships. But yet they're attracted to it. So maybe initially there is the appeal, whether it's a social appeal or an emotional appeal of kind of wanting to forget your problems. But as we know, even physiologically, there becomes a conditioning or a dependence on that substance. And so we have this picture of, you know, stay away from it. Don't even look at it because it's appealing. It draws the person in with that initial pleasure. And it kind of, well, it does. It temporarily does away with the bad feelings and does away with the stress and the anxiety. And then when all those things flood back, you know, you're looking to have those things removed again. But what it does, of course, is it clouds perception and judgment. And so, again, maybe an extreme example given here in the Proverbs, seeing strange sights and imagining confusing things. But we understand that even nowadays, a smaller amount can, you know, cloud a person's judgment, perception, so that they're not thinking clearly, they're not using their faculties at the highest capacity. And so there are consequences. Getting beat up, getting hurt, whether by others or just by the problems that the person has created in general. But notice this, even at the end, even after all of this description, it's the drunkard says himself, when can I wake up to find another drink, right? So after the long night that's ended, you know, maybe in sorrow, waking up to a terrible headache, already they're thinking, well, if I can just drink some more, it'll go away, right? And so you set this same kind of vicious cycle that we've noticed earlier, this time with drinking, where it's appealing. There's something about it that's for the moment is pleasurable, but it misprioritizing at first, and even the influence of the alcohol clouds perception and judgment, has destructive consequences, but yet there's still a desire for more. And so that's the picture in chapter 23. The consequences, again, are similar. Spending all your money on drink, and so you never turn out you're never rich because of the money wasted on wine or on drink. This passage is interesting to me, and maybe we'll come back to it in a second, but 31, 4, and 5, this is Lemuel, the king, and his mother giving him advice, saying, "It is not for kings, O Lemuel, not for kings to drink wine, not for rulers to crave beer, lest they drink and forget what the law decrees and deprive all the oppressed of their rights." So notice the consequences first, because that was what we're talking about. It corrupts judgment. So she says, you'll drink and then you won't be able to do your job that you're supposed to do because your judgment will be messed up, and that will have a harmful effect on others. And so the picture is that drunkenness harms yourself, it harms other people. But notice that the point of this passage is that Lemuel's mother is saying, you're above this. Okay? You have a calling, you have a responsibility as a king, as someone who's responsible for your people. And that high calling should mean that you don't even, tempt yourself, so to speak, with this. You're going to stay away from it because you know that it can very easily destroy you. Could you get a charger for me? I got a low battery. That would be like the worst end. I do all this and then my computer runs out of battery. So hopefully there's a spot for a plug in here. We'll make it work. Okay, and then one more consequence I believe we have here. That was it. So drunkenness, the vicious cycle, and the poverty, destruction of relationship, clouding of judgment, all that stuff, and yet the drunkard wants to go back. So let's go on to gluttony. And I'll just say about it, this would be a longer conversation, I think. Thank you. Okay, nothing like live television, right? Never know what will happen. Okay, plugged in, charging, good to go. So what's interesting about gluttony, thank you, Robert, for your pity. But the thing about gluttony is that we, for whatever reason, seem to kind of dismiss gluttony and kind of act like it's not a sin that we could possibly be guilty of. I'm not really sure what's behind that, but maybe we imagine only in its extreme form, and so we think, oh, well, I've never done that. Maybe we imagine that it's only referring to eating disorders or something. But again, in the context of just lacking control or self-control, notice some of these things. Notice how it's put together with the drinking problem. So do not join with those who drink too much wine or gorge themselves on meat. Drunkards and gluttons become poor, and drowsiness clothes them in rags. So it can be another way to waste money and to waste resources. And actually, in today's world, I don't think it's that uncommon that people get themselves in financial straits because they are just always eating out. And their monthly budget is so consumed by spending money at restaurants, maybe because that's convenient or maybe because that's just what they like to do. They like to eat out all the time. That it actually is, it's a financial burden month to month because of all the money spent. Houston's actually a fairly easy city for that to happen to you in. So there's that. There's the wasting of resources on food. There's also this idea of the drowsiness, clothes them in rags. Again, if you're prioritizing the fulfillment of food, then your judgment is out of whack. Not to mention maybe there's a statement physiologically about the kind of drowsiness that comes on you when you're kind of loaded up and full, like after Thanksgiving dinner or something. I'm not sure, but 23:1-3 is interesting. When you sit to dine with a ruler, note well what is before you. Put a knife to your throat if you are given to gluttony. Do not crave his delicacies, for that food is deceptive. I'm not exactly sure what all is behind this this passage here, but there does seem to be something about the maybe the idea is that you're running with a certain crowd here, and it's a bad habit to kind of get sucked into the world of, you know, fine dining and delicacies and kind of putting all the emphasis on that, a life of luxury. And maybe the proverb is kind of warning you against that. It could be that it's warning against, you know, you're so highly prioritizing food that others, that this person's able to be taken advantage of because they're, again, being sucked into this situation in which they're vulnerable because they're craving the food. And that's deceptive. But again, wrong values, wrong prioritizing. Do not eat the food of a stingy man. Do not crave his delicacies. The same sort of idea. It can get you in trouble. But notice this last one here, maybe the most important one for us to get. 25:16, if you find honey, eat just enough, too much of it, and you will vomit. That seems to be the focus of this. Or maybe I should say I kind of think I want to make this the focus of what we're saying. About food in particular, and maybe we should be more aware of the fact that how much we eat and what we eat might actually, according to the Proverbs, have a spiritual component. There is an element of wisdom in how a person eats that we talk about it in the context of health and wellness and all that, but Proverbs seems to kind of, you know, include that with wise living and being under control. And that's really what we're getting here. So getting to the common problem between these, notice these passages here in the Proverbs. The lazy man refuses, his hands refuse to work, as opposed to the ant who's working even if he doesn't have an overseer. Wine leads the person astray, kind of catches them in that in their grasp. A person, you know, lacks self-control is defenseless, okay? And then the person who can control his temper is better than one who takes a city. The idea here that's being repeated, I think, over and over again is that in for the lazy, the sluggard, the drunkard, and the glutton, he is not in control. Something else is controlling him. He is being controlled by his desire for sleep. He's being controlled by his desire for drink or for food. The wise person is in control of his own faculties, is in control of his own life. He's in charge. I'm struck by what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12, when it's an interesting passage, he's kind of granting the Corinthians their argument and saying, okay, let's just take what you're saying, that all things are lawful. Now, I don't think Paul would actually say all things are lawful, but Paul says, let's just say that's the case. All things are lawful, but I will not be mastered by anything. Kind of an interesting statement. It's even to say that even if something is okay, permissible, lawful, if it's mastering us, if it has control over us, then that's not appropriate for a Christian. That's a very dangerous situation to be in. And I think you can read that idea back into the Proverbs to show that the wise living includes being the one who's in control and not letting your desires get the best of you. And that seems to be the common problem with the sluggard, the drunkard, and the glutton. So who's in control? Are we in control, or is something else controlling us? Okay, we've just passed 8 o'clock here, and we'll move now to the back of the handout and the other side of the story, literally and metaphorically. So real quickly, I just point this out. The Proverbs does say, the wisdom literature at least, you know, shows us that there are proper uses for all these things. I guess we could say quite a bit about this, but just notice, like Ecclesiastes 5, the sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much. The abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. So in its place, their sleep is good. It's a blessing, and if you've worked hard, you get to enjoy a good night's sleep and benefit from that. Even something like wine, we understand that it has uses in the scripture all the way through that are positive. 31:6-7 is interesting. It talks about, you know, wine to those who are in anguish. And remember, this is actually the verses right after King Lemuel is told, you stay away from it because you're a king and you don't need to be messing around with that. So maybe the idea is, you know, in wisdom, you keep it at arm's length, you stay away from it. But it does have maybe therapeutic or healing purposes for those who are hurting. And then 24, 13, and 14, food is good. And honey, my son, for it is good. Honey from the comb is sweet to your taste. Know also that wisdom is sweet to your soul. So maybe a couple points we would make here is that, one, the wise person recognizes that these things that God has created have their place, but they are not just indulgences to seek for pleasure and for pleasure's sake and just to enjoy as much of that pleasure as possible. It's about, maybe we would say, moderation to some degree with some of this. But it's also about recognizing that these things do not find, you don't find fulfillment in these things. In fact, trying to find fulfillment in these things leads to lots of danger and destruction. Instead, the wise person recognizes that fulfillment is in wisdom or is in the fear of the Lord and the knowledge of God. These things do have their place when seen in a proper view. So what I want to talk about as we close off, oh, there we go. The fig tree, eat its fruits. So you've worked to gain something, you get to enjoy that. And you receive even honor as well as the fruit of your labor. Okay, so let's talk about the principles of diligent work. These verses are on your handout. What we're going to do is go through these verses in order and just read them and just kind of see what they're saying. And then there'll be another slide that goes through the same verses in the same order that has a point, a lesson about each verse. So 14:4, this is one of my favorite proverbs. Where no oxen are, the trough is clean, but much increase comes by the strength of an ox. It's interesting. It's saying that, you know, if you didn't have any oxen, your stall would be really clean and you never have to clean it. That'd be really nice. Except for with no ox, you get no work done. So having oxen is how you get work done, is how you feed yourself, but that also means you got to clean the stall afterwards. So my modern day example of this is, you know, you want to never have to clean your kitchen? Well, eat out every meal. Okay. But you know, eating at home is good for several reasons. But it means you have to clean your kitchen. You have to do the dishes. Anyway, we'll make the point about that in a second. Robert says it's similar to having kids. So I'm assuming he means, you know, lots of cleanup in different ways, but it's, you know, that's what you take on. 24:27, finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready. After that, build your house. Outdoor work, I think, would refer to crops. So have that in our mind. So take care of the fields and the crops first, and then worry about the house where you're going to be, sleeping and enjoying yourself. So again, we'll come back to these. But 23 to 27, we won't read all of it, but notice, know the condition of your flocks, give careful attention to your herds, and you know, notice looking over the various resources you have, the lambs and the goats and the grass and milk and all that stuff. You know, that proverb's all about paying attention to all of that and knowing it, knowing what you have and knowing that well. 16:26, the laborer's appetite works for him. His hunger drives him. So here's a picture of a laborer that's motivated by the fact that he doesn't want to starve. That's what this proverb seems to be about. 21:5, the plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty. So do something quickly usually doesn't work out very well. Plans and diligence is the path to profit. 13:11, dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money little by little makes it grow. So honest and hard work seems to go together, and then dishonest and hasty seems to go together as well. The wise person is adding honestly, even though that means going little by little. That's how he makes his wealth grow. 27:18, he who tends a fig tree will eat its fruit. He who looks after his master will be honored. This is a statement about working for somebody else. And caring not just for yourself and your own work and your own livelihood, but actually looking after the one that you're working. If you've been entrusted with responsibility, seeing to him and to his needs and to his honor as well. And then 22, 29, you see a man skilled in his work, he will serve before kings. He will not serve before obscure man. So being good at the work that you do. Okay, go through the same verses here, or at least referring to the same verses and making a point here about how we produce and care for the things that that we get in this life. 14:4, that's the ox's pen proverb. Hard work means accepting the inconveniences of that, the cleanup, the sacrifices that have to be made. That's just part of it. And the wise person accepts that and says, okay, it's inconvenient, it's hard, I'm going to do it anyway. 24:27, tend to the outside first. There's this idea of delayed gratification, of doing things that are hard now, instead of just, well, you know, I'm going to put off the hard things till later. No, do the hard things. And oftentimes the hard things are the things that are of more consequence, like taking care of the fields before you build your house. But maybe that's a daily thing. Maybe every day we on our to-do list, we do the things that are hardest first. There's wisdom in that. So I've heard. And maybe just more generally in life where, you know, we know that there are big, important things to really take care of, and they may be hard and heavy to deal with, but we focus on that. We prioritize that before just the things that are comfortable or that are focused on our own pleasure. 27:23-27, the accounting of your affairs, the goats and the lambs and the cattle and all that. Knowing what we have, being aware of our assets, of our liabilities, and being responsible enough to know all of that, to take a literal accounting of those things, so that we know where we stand at all times and can take care of what has been entrusted to us. 16:26, this idea of hunger being a motivation. If there are no consequences, then there is no motivation to some degree. And so the skin in the game thing, this was the example I thought of. If any of you are Dave Ramsey people, one of Dave Ramsey's tricks is the cash envelope system. So you get all your money for the month in cash, and you put it in envelopes for the different things you're going to need. So you need $200 for groceries or whatever, you put that in an envelope, and that's what you use for groceries. And so the idea is that if on the 30th of the month you're at the grocery store and you only have $19.25 left in that envelope, and your total is, you know, $25, well, you don't have the money to pay for it. You gotta make some choices, put some things back. And so that'd be one example of ways that we can kind of trick ourselves maybe, or force ourselves to have real consequences for not disciplining ourselves and change our habits that way. 21:5, the plans of the diligent are lead to plenty. So this is going slow, being cautious, forethought, thinking ahead, going step by step. That's the next one. Little by little, it's got to be honest. Even if it's slow, we'd much rather make our money honestly and just have little by little than do something dishonest or hasty to try to get rich quick, according to the Proverbs. 27:18, this is looking after those that you work for, making the boss look good, honoring others as opposed to only being concerned about our own honor. There's some New Testament parallels that you probably can't even see on the screen because the type is so small. But 22:29, the skill. So getting better, making it a point to increase our abilities, improve our abilities in what we do, because the more skill that we have, the more productive we can be, not only in our work that makes us money, but just in the work we have in life for our families, for the community, for our churches. Getting better at what we do is part of good, hard, honest work as well. Okay, so we're about done here. So goals and objectives, just kind of think back to see if we've accomplished any of this. Do we understand the consequences of lacking self-control, maybe a little more motivated, determined to improve our self-discipline? And then in terms of the objectives, could you do this if I asked you? Maybe I'll ask these people here, maybe not. But could you list the things that have control over the sluggard, the drunkard, and the glutton? Could you list the things that these three groups of people have in common? And then could you list some of the principles of discipline work? Okay, so we will end, as we normally do, with a discussion question. So I will stay live. So the question will stay up, but I'll mute myself. And you can discuss, if you're with other people, you can discuss this. What disciplines, habits can we cultivate in our life to avoid being mastered by our own desires. So if the goal is to be in control, what is it that we can do to make sure that we are in control and we do stay in control of our own desires and our own lives, as opposed to falling into a bad way where we are controlled by our desires? Okay, so that's the end of class. Feel free to discuss if you have people to discuss with. You can also put something in the chat if you would like to, an answer to these questions. But I appreciate everyone's patience with the technical difficulties. I think we made it work. And as always, this video will stay up to be accessed later if you weren't able to watch it tonight. So thanks, and we'll see you next week.